What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday night. We're back with another show tonight. Bay Ragney here with an old friend. We're going to get reacquainted. Let's see if he remembers the last time we talked. It's been a few years. Mr. James Durbin. But before we get into that, let me just tell everybody about our sponsor, the one and only Bombers and Sleeves. They are a lifestyle apparel brand, and they're dedicated to bringing you the war on self-doubt. This is for the bold, the fearless, and the authentic souls who never back down and wear it all on your sleeves. Bomb your boundaries and shop Bombers and Sleeves today at bombersandsleeves.com. So, he's back. A lot has changed over the years. Let's see if he remembers this. The last time we talked, James, it was literally the night before the announcement was being made that you were the new singer for Quiet Riot.
Really? Crazy.
And, like, I knew, like, your PR at the time, I forget who it was, that had given me the heads up, and they were like, you can't say nothing. And, like, the whole time we were, like, trying to beat around the bush without saying
it. Oh, that's crazy. I don't remember that. That's wild. Yeah, that was a crazy time. There was a lot going on then.
Yeah, right? Right. So, I mean, that was, like, what? Just over 3 years ago, I guess. And, yeah, how was it? I mean, that had been a hell of an experience working with, you know, Frankie Benali and the rest of the guys, Chuck and Alex.
It was great. Awesome experience, awesome time, you know. A lot of great shows played, a lot of favorite memories of shows and, you know, backstage shenanigans and all that stuff, yeah.
Was it kind of weird, though, because you being, I mean, basically like half those guys' age, you know what I mean? They're like double your age. Did you feel like the kid or did they truly make you feel like part of the band?
No, I definitely felt like the kid quite a lot, but you know, Alex and I were friends before,
right?
And so, you know, we just kind of stuck with each other and hung out most of the time together.
Was there like I'm sure with Alex, and I know, like you said, you guys worked before. Was there any like mentoring going on, like from those guys since they've been around the block a few times?
No, not necessarily. You know, at that point I'd already been in it for, you know, Idol had been six or seven years before. So, you know, I've had plenty of, you know, not 40 years experience on the road, but
right.
It's the same road and the same venues and the same, you know, the same, can I swear?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Same shit, different city, you know, you know, just things that once you've been doing it for as long as, you know, even if you've been doing it for 3 years, 4 years, whatever, it's like at a certain point, there's not really much different. You know, you get to the town, you check into your hotel if you can, you go to the venue, you sound check, you go back to the hotel, you rest up, you go back to the venue, you eat dinner, you, you know, listen to the opening band, you play your show, you take pictures and sign autographs afterwards, go back to the hotel, catch a few hours of sleep if there's a few hours available, and then you're back on the road.
Now, I got to admit, though, like, when you were doing it, I was like, and everybody did, they were very supportive of you filling, you know, Kevin's shoes and thought you were doing a tremendous job. And when the announcement came out that you had left the band, I was kind of shocked. I was like, oh, wow, okay. Like, and then I, you know, years later now, like, I think to myself, was the fact that Frankie was sick, was that playing part of it? Was it just the true musical difference? Did you just want to do solo? Was it a mix of everything above? Like,
well, it's really hard to say, but you know, at this point, I'm not really in any position to talk about it, as I've been reminded, and so you know, I think everything that can be said and has been said is already out there. So if people are that interested in hearing about it, and they can go there. But today, I'd love to talk about the album. It comes out in 2 days.
Big the big announcement going on, yeah. The Beast Awakens. So I got to ask though, are you the Beast or is the music the Beast?
I'd say that the Beast is more like the music. I'd say the Beast is definitely the music. The Beast is also the awakening within oneself and the idea that one can do greater things than one ever imagined. And also the Beast Awakening is, the song itself was inspired by, an article that I had read about, famous Japanese professional wrestler by the name of Jushin Thunder Liger. And Liger was he was retiring, and this article was about him and his wrestling career. And I was so interested to know if he had had an alter ego that was, you know, evil. And to find out, you know, when he had his mask removed, and having your mask removed, you know, this mask is the sacred part of these characters and of their history and of their, just their overall persona, that when the mask is removed, you don't know if you're going to, normally you'd find the man, this man underneath that is embarrassed to have his mask removed. And with Jushin, the difference was, is that when you removed his mask, you found Kieran Liger underneath, which was this beast. And when you remove his mask, you are awakening this evil from within. And you don't want to make that mistake of removing the mask, you know? And so I felt like in that way, at that time that I wrote the song, you know, just coming off the cusp of that experience with the band, that in a way I was removing my own metal mask, if you will, and what would you find underneath that?
You know, I hear a lot of passion as you're talking about the world of professional wrestling. I don't know if you realize that that's my former life, and I was actually a person who appears on your album, Chris Jericho. It's been a long time, but I was a member of ECW and one of the original Dudley Boys.
I thought so.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I see the passion in you. We're talking about wrestling. That's cool. And Liger, I was a huge fan of. And, yeah, mad respect for Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, just a veteran of so many years and so many different avenues and so many different eras of wrestling, and a character that, and a persona, not just the mask, but the way he performed and the way he told his stories. You know, had he not retired last year, he'd still be doing it. You know, he'd still be finding a way to do it in this crazy age of age of wrestling that is, you know, the age of finding a way and making a way where there is none. You know, so it's, yeah, it's just knowing that that character lived within him, and finding that out. You know, you remove the mask, and he's got white face and like black hollow eyes, and tries to drive a steel stake through the heart of his opponent. You know, it's just like, that's like, whoa, you really unleashed the beast. And so I use that as you know, the principle of the idea to write that song, which ended up becoming the title track of the album.
Well, let's talk about that too. Like, you know, like we just mentioned, Chris Jericho appears on one of the tracks on the album. Have you ever talked with Chris about the true, I mean, because you've got to know by now, and Chris definitely knows, the parallels between the wrestling business and the music business are, it's scary. It really is.
Yeah, no, of course. I've known it since I was 12, 13. Just like, you know, knowing the touring, the grueling, some, you know, often grueling conditions, unless you're in like the main, you know, the big companies, but even still, you know, you have to take care of your own travel.
Right.
I know with the, you know, with the big boys in New York that they, you know, guys have to handle their own travel and book their own rental cars and handle their own hotels and everything. And you know, it's not the idea that most people have about it, like a NBA team or something, you know, where they're all flying together on private jets. You know, that's like
right.
A very privileged few, or if you're in those circles. So of course, you know, I've spent the years on the road touring and the gnarly conditions and just not, you know, sometimes you play a show and you don't know where you're going to sleep that night. So figuring that out, you'd love to take a shower, but you just got to stick it out for the next, you know, 12 days before you can get to one. So, you know, having a gear bag full of wet clothes that you have to put on night after night. Yeah. That one's great too.
Absolutely.
It's not all glitz and glamour.
No, not at all. That's the funny thing. Like, so many people truly think it is all glitz and glamour. They don't realize the true struggles within that really go on.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll, but it's even a long way to the middle, and even a longer way to the bottom. You know, but it's like you got to be good to everybody coming up or coming down, because it's the same people that you see on the climb up, as the trek back down, and all in between, you know, don't be a dick. That's the motto. That's the creed.
Now, how did you and Chris end up getting hooked up?
Jericho and I became friends when I was on Idol and he was on Dancing with the Stars. And they film in the same building. So if our boxes here where I see you and you see me, you know, if the little black line between us is a hallway and then each separate side, your screen is where Dancing with the Stars films and my screen is where the American Idol films, and they're all contained within the box of our phones or screens. Gotcha. You know, kind of like that. So for the top 11 results night, they had brought Idol had brought out Hulk Hogan to they brought out old Terry to come and tell me that I was going through, and he was with TNA Impact at the time, and so he comes out and, you know, tells us, you know, I forget what it, no, I remember Ryan Seacrest was like, you know, you guys did great last night, your performances. It was me and my friend Paul McDonald, who was a contestant on Idol, same season, and we're standing there, and Ryan's, but like, Ryan says, but, you know, both of you are not safe. I mean, really not safe. And then, you know, because he's with TNA, they wanted to use some kind of entrance music. They couldn't use a Real American, so they did Eye of the Tiger instead. And as these elephant doors start opening on the stage, and Hogan's, I just see the silhouette of him just doing like the, you know, the brothered up pose. I thought I saw like a string coming down. So I thought, you know, I thought that it was somebody in a costume. I thought somebody was wearing a Hogan costume. And a couple days later, they had had me film this segment in the Idol House where we set up all these pillows and I was dropping people with pile drivers and stuff. And whatnot. And they had me say a few different like, call out. So they said,
okay,
they had me do like, eat your heart out, The Miz, eat your heart out, John Cena, eat your heart out, Rock, eat your heart out, Hogan. And then, you know, not knowing they were working on who they were going to get to come in. And so they brought Hulk in. And then the next day, Jericho walks over and he's like, what's up, Durbin? Enjoying the show, been enjoying the metal and Hogan. And so we just kind of hit it off from there. And, of course, with the Dancing with the Stars contestants, they're adults and, you know, able to go out and do whatever they want. And but for us Idol contestants, we weren't able to go out and go places. So Jericho would sneak me out of the back of the hotel and take me to the Rainbow Room on Sunset and go eat mozzarella sticks and, you know, order his vodka and water in a short glass. And because he had just quit drinking beer. That didn't stop him from drinking vodka, as he calls them, yeah, boys. And we snuck out. We went to, he got tickets to Stevie Nicks and Rod Stewart at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh,
and just going places with him was just great. So we've kept in touch over the last 10 years and always knew I wanted to get him on a record eventually when I made my heavy metal album. So it just worked out. I texted him and was like, Chris, if you were to hypothetically sing on a kind of concept album, what kind of character would you want to play? Because I knew, like, okay, if I didn't have a song that was, like, something he would want to be on, I could write it. And he was like, well, I'd either want to be the villain or a wizard. And I was like, I just wrote a wizard song. So I'll send it to you. He's like, okay. And I sent it to him. He listened to it. He's like, dude, this is fucking good. I really like this. Yeah, love to sing on it. So Jericho sang on it. Got Phil Demmel in there also. And yeah, it's just great. It's a great memory. Tons of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. So like, how did this whole thing come together with the Beast Awakens? Like, did you have this whole idea in your head? Like you wanted to really go heavy? Did Frontiers approach you with the idea? Like how did it all come together?
Yeah. After I stepped down from QR, like 2 days later, the first email in my inbox was from Frontiers. And so the albums that we did when I was with the band that we did were released through Frontiers. So they were the first email in my inbox said, you know, we hate to see you go, you know, like this and just the circumstances and the situation. But we'd love to discuss you doing a solo album with us. And so we talked basically I was like, you know, what kind of album are you guys interested in me making? And they said, well, what kind of album do you want to make? I was like, oh, classic heavy metal. And we were just kind of like, that's what I was going to say. You know, so it just really worked out. But even with that, knowing like classic heavy metal takes so many different forms and so many different subgenres. So it's like, at one point I was like, you know, maybe I'll write like this cool, like, classic kind of bluesy Sammy Hagar kind of a vibe. But then as I'm writing it, I got more and more into, what if I could write a kind of a Dio Judas Priest Sabbath album, you know? And once I got that idea in my head, it was just like, why not? And I'd never considered myself much of a rhythm guitar player or a lead guitar player or riff writer, you know, very like simple rhythms and mostly acoustic stuff. And so I just kind of got it in my head, like, you know what? You can do it. I was living in Nashville and was doing some shows with a bunch of the guys from Fozzy, actually, down in Georgia. And we were setting up for a rehearsal or a sound check or something. And Rich Ward was there. And, you know, we went through a couple songs and he was running sound at the rehearsal space. And I was talking to the Duke afterwards. And you know, I was like, how does it sound? He's like, dude, I had no idea you were such a great guitar player. You're a really great rhythm guitar player. And I was like, really? I've never considered myself. You need to start giving yourself credit for being a great guitar player. And so I always remember what Rich said, especially making this album, like, right. You can do it. You're better than you think you are. You're better than you give yourself credit for. And, you know, just believe in yourself, believe that you can do it, and you can totally do it, you know? And so that's when I started figuring out a way to write these songs that worked for me, not necessarily just sitting there and hammering things out on guitar, but thinking of in my head of, like, melody ideas. And so I started recording those on my phone and compiling a bunch of voice memos of guitar hook ideas that were actually just me singing them. Like for The Beast Awakens, one of the first ones that happened was dun 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 dun. So I took that and I went to my guitar and I transposed it and it was in drop D and it was perfect. And it was like, oh, I got pitch, you know, pitch was on. So it worked out perfectly. I could just transpose it immediately from there to there without any like having to pitch it up or pitch it down or find it. So it just worked out that way. And I wrote so many of the album songs like that, you know, just these ideas on guitar. And even still, that's still the way that I write them and continue to write songs for, you know, hopefully for the inclusion on the next album.
That's cool. Now, how about like you just said, like 2 days later, you got that email from Frontiers. You know, you're married, you got kids, you got a family to take care of. How scary of a time was that? Like for that 48 hours before you get that email, were you kind of like, all right, well, where do I go from here now?
Not at all. Not at all. No, I mean, even during that time, you know, I mean, like it wasn't. Nothing was promised even during that time and playing shows. Like, you know, if a show gets canceled, you don't get paid. You know, if weather permitting something happens, you got to figure it out. And so just figuring out other ways and hustling and playing other shows and acoustic shows, or even during that time, like in 2018, I made an album called Homeland. And, you know, mm-hmm. It was like, okay, well, this is kind of like a part-time job. So I got to figure out what to do with the other part-time,
right.
You know, and, you know, part-time jobs don't cut it. So, you know, it's, you gotta make a way when there is none. And that's what I did with Homeland, and, you know, crowdsourced it and, released it through our own independent label, Wildvine Records. And, you know, I wrote every song on Homeland. I mixed it, mastered it, produced it, engineered it. Played every instrument. My wife did the photography. I did all the album design. We made the merch. We shipped it out of our own house and everything, packaged everything and all that. So, you know, it's like, you know, we just figured it out. So even when it happened and the split happened, I was just like, sweet, what's next? I had shows booked. It was like, finally, like, oh, I can call all these people back and email these people back and actually book these shows that I wasn't able to, you know, because of that commitment. And so, like, right. you know, big money too, like things that I had to turn down and had to cancel, like 1 year because it was conflicting dates. And then I was like, hey, I'm free now, you know, can we, you want me back this year, you know, to make up for what that mix up happened last year? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And it was just like, all right, we're off to the races. You know, I did this thing and this, and like great things that I really wanted to do and I'm really passionate about, like outreach programs and charity things and keynote conferences for autism conventions and things. And, you know, and these things that I'm passionate about, that it was really great to just like get back in there and like didn't miss a beat, you know. And it was great. I mean, like, even when I was with the band, I couldn't be from the band, you know, like on a billing or anything. So it's not like it was any different not being in the band, because, you know, once you're not in the band, you still can't use the thing, you know, still can't use the band name right. to promote anything. So, you know, nothing was different. It was just kind of like, oh, now there's no restrictions. Now there's no holds. There's no extra hurdle to jump or an extra person to clear things with or to negotiate with or to convert, right. you know, let me do this, you know, this is a good idea, you know, none of that. So it's just like, it's great. And I love it like that. That's how I've been doing things for so long. I went fully sure. independent in 2015. And, you know, we started still working with booking agents, but I book a lot of stuff myself. And I love being that, like, I love being my own liaison, like, and just, I like the business of it. I like the negotiating. I like the all that stuff and, you know, figuring that stuff out, and also like not having a middleman. So, you know, all the information, like I enjoy knowing everything there is to know for a situation, you know, and I just get to treat people the way that I treat people. That's a big thing. I think you're breaking up. Can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Yeah, we're on. Okay, there we go. So, now I just was like kind of have a big influence with this.
I'm losing you again.
Yeah. Was taking a page out of. How about now?
You there?
Got a little. Modern technology, right? I'm here. I'm totally here.
Okay.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I guess that's enough. So I was saying, do you think you've taken a page out of the Ronnie James Dio book by just going by Durbin now?
Yes, of course. I'm very heavily influenced by Ronnie. I've been wanting to do Durbin for a long time. I wanted to do Durbin after Idol. And, you know, and it was just kind of a you know, when there's so many cooks in the kitchen, there's, you get voted out. So, you know, in that way, but that's fine. You know, it was, I have no regrets. I choose to live life without regrets and a clear conscience. And, you know, it's, I'm, in a lot of ways, I'm really glad that we didn't do it then, because I get to still make, you know, I can still make a James Durbin album and know that it's right. going to be distinctly different from a Durbin album. You know, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm a songwriter. So, you know, I've got a bunch of songs that are like Homeland. You know, I've got a lot of songs sure. like that Americana singer-songwriter thing, which... You know, I don't shy away from, like, I'd love to make every kind of record just to know that I did it and that I challenged myself and went there. I'd love to make a reggae album. I listened to like every Bob Marley album last summer, front to back, and just got really, really deep into his songwriting and his, you know, everything, just like knowing like 76, 77, 78, and like Exodus, Kaya, and I can't remember the third one at this moment, but just like knowing like the bulk of Bob Marley's, you know, extensive hits catalog was written right. and released in those 3 years, which is just mind-blowing, you know, just like, oh my god, these timeless songs. So it's just like, it'd be fun to, like, you know, write some protest tunes. You know, just get real high and write some protest tunes, and you know like get in a room, be like, you know, all right, drummer, play me some drums, and just, they just play just a little backbeat, and then you're just like, all right, bass player, play something, you know, play something funky, and then I just sit there on guitar just going chick 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 chick. And that's, you know, that sounds fun. I'd love to make a big band album, you know, with like a orchestra and big horn section, and play a bunch of jazz standards and show tunes. You know, it's just, I love making music. I love it.
That's awesome. That's, dude, I love that. And, you know, the fact that, you know, the way the business part of the music business is now, you can totally do that. You don't have to just be Durbin or James Durbin Homeland. You can do whatever the hell you want.
That's great. You know, I'm stoked about that. But, you know, definitely for the time being and for the foreseeable future, I'm very excited to, you know, be doing The Beast Awakens and all that. So, you know, it's I'm stoked. I'm happy where I'm at. Good time.
What was the initial reaction when the first single video came out, The Prince of Metal? Were people kind of shocked, surprised, like, oh my god, like, James Durbin's like Iron Maiden now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, the real reactions that I got, well, the first song we released was Kings Before You with Jericho and Phil Demmel. And so, like, with that was like, oh, is, like, I saw a couple of people like, do we have a new Dio? Like, is someone doing the Dio thing again? Like, oh, cool, you know? And that was like really like, oh, that's, wow, people think that. Like, it brings that, you know, that idea comes to mind, and it's very obvious, and it's out there, but it's cool that people realized it and could see it and latch onto it. And then, yeah, when Prince of Metal came out, it's just awesome. I love that I was able to do this. I did it myself, and I wrote these songs myself, and I rose to the challenge, you know, and I challenged myself, and I exceeded all of my own expectations of what I thought that I was capable of songwriting, guitar playing, all of that, and creating the story and everything. And
sure.
It's just been great. You know, I like to like set a expectation at zero of what I think people are going to think of it, because everybody consumes music differently. And yeah. I know from doing this for 10 years of writing and releasing music, and even like the four or five years previous before Idol, doing it, you know, and writing songs and playing songs and, you know, trying to give your music away for free and nobody wants it, you know, and then you're like, oh, it's just because these songs suck. That's why, you know, learning from that. So it's just been great. You know, when I set my expectation to nothing, then I'm just stoked either way, because, you know, why shouldn't you just be stoked and be, you know, be happy with the result and absolutely, what people think of something? You know, why give yourself any other expectation? But it's been great. I'm stoked with the way that people are consuming it and liking it. And you know, I wanted to, knowing that that this is, you know, that I wrote this album in the year of our Lord Voldemort, 2020, that I don't know when touring's going to resume. So I wanted to write an album that was visual in an audio sense, you know, with the lyrics and the storytelling and the phonetics and everything in that, like how you tell the story, how you sing it. That's another thing I got a lot from Dio and Halford and Dickinson, of just like, you know, like how to sing about something that's not real, something that's fantasy, something that's,
you right,
know, fiction, but sing about it with conviction and meaning and passion. And that was just, you know, being able to do that really gives it like this it gives it a weight. It gives it a real gravity with these songs. And I just can't wait for people to actually like get to put the record on and listen to it all the way through, you know, and I, that's the only expectation I have. I know that we are in the age of singles and all that, but I really hope that a lot of people that are going to take the time to put the record on or buy the record will just sit there and give themselves the time and, you know, mix a stiff drink or, you know, roll a fat joint and, you know, scrape out the keef at the bottom of the grinder and, you know, and just sprinkle it all in there and just get all the keefy goodness out of it. And, because it really is, I wanted to make something that, I just saw a quote from Loudwire that I had to post that was just saying like, it sounds like this album was lost in some, you know, heavy metal vault from some indie metal label from 40 years ago. You know, it's just like it's got that vibe to it. I'm just like,
it does.
Yes, mission accomplished. That's what we set out to. That's what I set out to do, was to have that kind of a record that, you know, invoked that. That spirit, that energy, that just that style, that feeling.
And, I'll tell you, it definitely has like, you know, that classic old school 80s metal style. But like when you hear the first few singles, like before I got to like really sit and listen to the album earlier, the whole thing, I was kind of surprised that it's a lot more melodic than I was expecting. I was like, you know, I was expecting more like in your face. And then I was like, wow, like, you know, that other side, like you took the your homeland side and older stuff of your music, but you transformed it to that metal and put the melodic of the James Durbin into the metal Durbin.
Yeah, that's the genre of classic heavy metal that I am cut from. That's just... No matter what kind of song I'm writing, I'm addicted to a hook. And if I can fit as many different hooks into one song as possible, that's how you create earworms. That's how you create, you know, something that somebody's going to latch onto. I found myself singing these songs all the time, you know, just like you take the hook and I'll take, you know, I can point to any song here. Into the Flames. How does it start? I see your eyes have lived the loss of sweet surrender, and I fear we have passed the point of no return. And then it goes into one hook, you know, after that one. Though we are traveling apart, we carry on together. Gold in your hands, the one that binds, it takes your mind and takes you. Third hook. Into the flames, into the fire, under the gaze of the evil eye, still walk beside you. And I'm just addicted to a hook. If I can fit a hook in there, like when I sing, I need to be singing something that is catchy, that feels like I'm singing it for a purpose. I have a very difficult time writing songs or singing songs or covering songs, or, you know, even if you're paid to do it, like singing songs that just go on and just like, you know, like when's right. The end of the song, where's the hook, is there a lift, you know, is there any room in the, no okay, no, all right, no, we'll just get through it over with. But you know, and especially if it's my record, especially if I'm writing the songs, the pressure for the songwriting, like there's no one that I can turn to and be like, it was him, he wrote the, you know, he wrote that song, wasn't me. You know, but it's also in that sense that it's me, like I've got nobody to high five in the room when I'm writing these songs to be like, dude, that's awesome, yeah, we got, you know, 17 hooks in this song. And then I give it to the guitar players, and then, you know, I just remind them, like the only thing I reminded any of the guitarists that played on the album was like, don't leave out any hooks, give it all the hooks, you know, we're catching as many fish as possible on this one line. Put all the hooks you got on that sucker, you know? Rig them up.
So, well, you mentioned, you know, you wrote this album last year in 2020. The pandemic hits. How much was written before the pandemic hit, or was that, like, the time when you really dove in and started doing all the writing of the album?
I'd say I probably had four, I'd say, like, a third of the album was already written before the pandemic hit. And then I had a little bit of writer's block. And then just found my groove and just, you know, I look back through like my voice memos and when I started saving demos on my phone, because I emailed them to myself so I can listen to them and you know, figure out sure. any bugs and anything that I'm trying to work out the writing of. And I looked back just last week, and so many songs were written like between February and March. There was like 4 songs written, and then like April, I think April and May, like every other song was written. So it was just really like, I just hit a groove. But I mean, even at that point, like I started to get a better sense once I had a certain few songs. Like, let me look. I think I had The Beast Awakens. I had Prince of Metal and Kings Before You and Into the Flames. So I think those were like the 4 that I had. Necromancer was one of the last songs I wrote, but it was the very first guitar riff that I wrote for the album in like November of 2019. Battle Cry was like the last. Like Battle Cry and Necromancer were the last songs I wrote for the album. Those were later additions, but the pandemic, I mean, for all the stress it caused and all the bad that it, you know, has had unfold, like having that time to sit at my desk and, you know that, you know, for a little part of time that, like, you know, an unemployment check was coming, like, oh, just sit at the desk and let's just write this sucker, you know? We got the record advance here. We got this, you know, look at that, unemployment checks there. Like, all right, cool. Let's just work on this. We're good. So it was, you know, just got to sit there and write it and bang it out. And then, you know, once it was written, then it's just like, all right, let's cancel the unemployment checks. Let's get back to work. Let's get back to voiceover work and songwriting and private parties and backyard tours and all that stuff. So it's been great. Last year was actually like between the album writing and everything, was a really, really great year, like just for personal success. And it was just really awesome. We did it. Yeah. You know,
I feel the same way. I felt like, you know, as bad as this situation has been with the pandemic, I feel like it's been a blessing. I think we all needed this reset or whatever you want to call it. I really do.
Yeah, definitely. It was good. You know, we're still figuring out how to work around it. I think that, I think a lot of things, but I think that, don't we all, think too much. Don't believe everything you think. That's a big one. I wish I could go back and tell myself that at a younger age. I wish I could go back and tell a lot of people that.
Right.
But just to, what a year. What a year. You know, there's a lot of things that are being changed for the better, I feel like. A lot of things that, like, you know, I walk into a restaurant, like, I just got some tacos. I got my tacos waiting for me downstairs, and, like, they had gloves on. And, like, pre-pandemic, they weren't wearing gloves.
No gloves.
Making the food, you know? And, like, now they're wearing gloves and masks. Like, that's great, you know? Like, yeah, hairnet keeps your hair out of my food, but, you know, the mask and the gloves keep everything else out of the food, too. So
absolutely.
Some things like that. And, the good things that we need to keep will stay, and time will only tell. So, you know, we just keep, Matthew McConaughey say, just keep on living. LIVIN, living.
That's it.
Gotta do.
Now, you had already mentioned, too, you know, with this whole pandemic, you know, we don't know what's going on with live shows. When live shows do start back up, is there a Durbin band in place ready to go, or is there going to be, you're going to put one together eventually? How's that looking?
There's an interim lineup, mainly people that played on the record, but it also depends on when that happens. You know, like, my drummer's from Y&T, my bass player plays with everybody. So it's, you know, it's who gets picked up first and who gets, you know, going out first. So if it's not Mike Van Rekuhl and Barry Sparks on drums and bass respectively, then, you know, I've got a Rolodex of guys and great guys that I've played with in the past that I know that can handle the the parts and are showmen and are great people to tour with and aren't assholes and, you know, and are gracious and kind and polite and humble. You know, that's great. I'm really happy that I have a good, solid roster of people that are willing to work with me and you know what to expect and everything. And that's, you know, very fortunate to have that. But I definitely hope that the first several times that we play these songs live as a full band, that it gets to be the people that really contributed to the album.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be awesome. That I did see, I think February 20th, you're doing an unplugged show.
I've got a cover band here in my hometown, Santa Cruz. So we're doing an unplugged show of our own, covers list. I might pull out a couple songs from the record, like I've done a couple times, just solo acoustic. I've done Battle Cry and Riders on the Wind and Kings Before You and Into the Flames and stuff like that. You know, some of the easier songs that can be played easier and still transposed to, one acoustic guitar in a easier playing format.
Nice. Yeah, how about big release day, Friday the 12th? I saw you're doing a Facebook Live release party.
Yes, I'm doing a Facebook Live Beast Unleashing the Beast Awakening party, 6:30. It's $14.98 as Facebook priced it. It would have been $15, but $14.98 sounds a lot better. It's cheaper. And so we're doing that. And I'm going to play a couple songs off the record, setting up my speakers, and we're going to, I'll play them from here and play a few acoustic, tell stories of the songwriting, answer questions, all that sort of stuff, have a beer, just hang out, and I'd love to be doing something in person with people and high-fiving everybody in the room and play a couple songs with the band and, have a giant, inflatable dragon and everybody gets to slay it, or, a big, dragon pinata that we all, beat with swords and take out all these little, candy hearts out of, That'd be great. I'd really love, I really wish we could have been doing that. What I really wanted to do was I wanted to celebrate the album release at, a Renaissance fair. And have everybody in costume and everything. That was going to be not only for the release, but that was going to be pandemic's going to be over. We're going to be able to go to the Renaissance Fair out here. And that's going to be get to take cool pictures in my Prince of Metal outfit and eat a giant turkey leg and drink a big old fat ass mead and get a wand and support all these independent artists and stuff. But lo and behold, we still gotta wait. So those medieval times are going through the plague. So
This is true. One thing too, I wanted to ask you about that I noticed. I guess Loudwire had you do a not even a countdown, but your top 10 favorite metal TV or hard rock TV performances, and one of the ones you put on there was Ghost. And it seemed, from what I read, Ghost was kind of a big influence, I think, in the actual song, The Beast Awakens.
Yeah. I was listening to a lot of Ghost at the time. And the original demo for The Beast Awakens that I had sent, I recently listened to it. And I have a plan to eventually, put up some of the demos as over the next couple months for people to hear how these ideas unfolded, what they sounded like originally. Into the Flame sounds like a completely different song, the original demo. It's very Ghost, very, very Ghost. Wow. A lot of whiny keyboards in the back and a lot of synth and just kind of figuring out different ideas and stuff. It also goes in with that, Judas Priest record with the airplane wing that's got Heading Out to the Highway. I can't remember the title. Turning Point, Vantage Point, something point.
Point of Entry.
Oh, well. Point of Entry. That's right. Yeah. Of course it's Point of Entry. There was just more you know, with that, like Turbo Lover, you got more of like the keyboards, the synthesizer kind of sounds. And so just kind of messing with that. And yeah, I listened to a lot of Ghost and just kind of, I had friends of mine been telling me like, you got to try out Ghost. You got to listen to Ghost. And for a lot of years where I just was like, the Satan band? No, no, thanks. Probably not a good, you know, just like it's like my Christian upbringing where like I look at it from afar and I'm like, boy, I really want to be there. I really want to, it looks like a really fun concert. It looks like a lot of fun. And I really want to wear that shirt, but my wife won't let me, you know, blame it on the warden. But I finally got into them and I finally put it on. I was just like, I heard something. And I was like, well, that's Ghost. Wow, that's really heavy, but at the same time is really melodic.
Yeah.
And, you know, reading up about Tobias Forge and that he was like an early bass player in Crash Diet, which was one of my favorite bands growing up and 12, 13 years ago. And it's just like, whoa, like he was buddies with Dave Lapard and like worked on those songs and was like, bringing those out, like that's amazing, that's so cool. And so like to know that like there's that connection there immediately, right? Was like, oh, I can get down with this. And then the theatrics and seeing like, you know, just like the Papa Emeritus characters and like he fully portrays them, and those are like full head latex masks that he puts on, and everything's like, that's just amazing. The visuals of that band, the, you know, it's not like I'd have to explain to my mom different, you know, or like or something, but like, you know, just like it's the Satan-y is its gimmick.
Yeah. Totally. The
Satanic is its gimmick. It's totally. It's Papa Shango, you know?
Yeah.
He's not necessarily like drinking pig's blood and like, you know, somebody answers the door and he's got like a goat's head on a stick, you know, it's like, smearing blood across the chest, and you know, but like, I know that's not like the precipice of Satanism either, but it's just interesting, you know, what you think for so many years, and then you finally listen to it, and you're like, oh shit, this rips, this is rad, this is really great. One of my buddies, Gronk, the orc shaman from my Prince of Metal music video, he calls them the Satanic Bee Gees. And I was like, oh, that's perfect, yeah, perfect. Perfect euphemism for those guys. So yeah, it's great. The early version of the Beast Awakens, the label Frontiers, they were like, too much synth. Let's take the synthesizers out. But it's great. You know, it's a different song without the synth. It's, we had to up the guitars and really you know, really make it a lot thicker and a lot heavier, which really helped. It was great. Fucking stoked with the outcome.
That's awesome. Well, dude, I'm excited to talk to you again. I'm excited about the new album for you. It's been great catching up. Less than 2 days ago, you got less than 48 hours ago till the official release. Where's the best place for us to send everybody so they can get it, hear it?
Definitely. If you go to my Instagram page, which is at James Durbin Official. There's a link in my bio that kind of is a one-stop shop for everything. It's got the links for if you're buying in Europe, physical copies from the European Frontiers label web store, the U.S. web store, you know, links for Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, Tidal, even links to find it and order it and request it from your local independent record store, wherever you are. Support that brick and mortar, support Absolutely. That mom and pop shop. You know, it's, even if you order it through them and they have it delivered to your house and like the mom and pop shop gets that extra $1.50 or that extra $2 on the surcharge, like do it for them, do it for the dream of owning a record store and all that. Keep that dream alive. Cause that's really where, you know, a lot of this, local promo and local support comes from. And on there, it's got links to my, my merch store as well, which if you're just looking for merch, it's jamesdurbin.threadless.com. And we got some Beast Awakens, stuff up there and, album centric, designs. And, if you're interested, if you had fun here and you want to hear more about this and drink a beer with me virtually, you can do so this Friday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time for the Beast Awakens album release party on Facebook. $15 a ticket, a $14.98 a ticket, special sale just for you and just for your listeners. And yeah, I'm stoked. Thanks for everybody for giving this album a chance and giving it a listen. And, you know, 10 years ago on American Idol, I urged America to give metal a chance. And now, you know, we're right back at it again, but it's a little different. Now we're urging you to give Durban metal a chance.
There you go. Well, Durban, James, thank you for continuing to wave that metal flag, keeping metal music alive. And you're the man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, babe. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Great talking to you again. And, dude, congrats again on the album.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Long live the Dudleys.
Yeah.